Welcome to the podcast series, Planning for Autism in Communities and Schools, with Dr. Tina Fletcher, Professor of Occupational Therapy at Texas Woman's University. Along with many neurotypical and neurodiverse colleagues, Dr. Fletcher has worked with community agencies and schools to tear down barriers and build up supports for autistic community members. And now, Dr. Tina Fletcher.
Today we're going to be talking about something a little bit different. In fact, I think today is a paper and pencil day for you. So if you're cruising down the highway, you're going to probably have to listen to this one twice. We're going to be talking a little bit about the backstory for people with autism in the community and dial it way back to when they were students in schools. So we're going to be discussing the topic of transition. And first of all, I want to credit my friend Kelly Wanzer, who is a speech and language pathologist, for this great information. And I'm also going to tell you that I'm going to give you the names of about four articles. If you're interested in learning more, I'm going to give you the name and the date. And then what I would do is drop it right into Google Scholar, and you'll be able to pull up that article. So after reading or listening to this podcast, you're going to be able to do a couple of things. So here's your listening assignment. First of all, you should be able to describe two goals of transition services for autistic learners. And secondly, you'll be able to detail some of the current barriers facing transition planning. And thirdly, you will be able to describe three ways schools and communities can support transition. So we've talked about meeting the needs of autistic community members in a variety of environments, and now we're going to talk about school, specifically the crucial part of an autistic person's life called transition. In this context, transition is the term that schools have long used to describe that period of time when students begin to think about and plan for their own life after high school. Transition services usually start at age 14, and in most public schools, they continue until the student graduates, which is usually around 17 or 18, or if they're in special education, when they age out of their programming, and that's at age 22. Yes, you can go to school until you're 22 under some circumstances. So during this time, schools, parents, therapists, educators, and most importantly, students work together to plan for the student's future. So amid the general turbulence of adolescence, student goals and coursework may change to target life skills as opposed to academic skills, and possible vocational interests should be considered and explored, and appropriate post-secondary opportunities should be discussed. So what do I mean by post-secondary? And really, that just means after high school. So basically, the drift right now is, what are they going to do after high school? Students are encouraged to take more responsibility for themselves, and terms like self-advocacy and self-determination are really the points of emphasis. But what do they really mean? So let's dive in and see what the recent research tells us. And I'm going to just emphasize again that for some students and young adults who have had all the decisions made for them prior to this point in time, sometimes it's very, very difficult for them to move into this phase of self-advocacy and self-determination. So in this context, the definition of self-advocacy is really nuanced, and it can vary from one expert to the next. But in general, an acceptable definition in most schools is, here it comes, self-advocacy is a person's ability to communicate their wants and their needs. So this encompasses any topic and any setting. Here's some examples. The ability to ask a cashier where the restroom is in a grocery store, or the ability to tell a doctor what hurts, or the ability to ask for help when it is needed. A lot of people say, what do you need? And they need to be able to say, this is what I need. Many autistic people have communication challenges in general, so it makes sense that self-advocacy, which is really driven by their communication skills, is a long-term work in progress, and probably we could even say a lifelong-term work in progress. Now, a broader topic related to self-advocacy is self-determination. You know what? This is important for all of us, but it's especially so for people on the autism spectrum. Self-determination is defined by a person's ability to set their own goals and work to meet them. So a simple example of self-determination could be when a person decides they want to buy a new phone. First of all, they decide which phone to purchase. They earn and save the money, and then they spend the money on the phone when they are ready. Self-determination is a great goal that educators, parents, and students strive toward during transition. So we've talked about self-advocacy and self-determination. If we consider gains in self-advocacy and self-determination to be really the tenets of transition planning or the markers of success, they can also serve as measuring sticks to evaluate transition services. All right, with that in mind, let's look at the findings from Here's Your First Research Paper. This paper was published by Paul Wehrman, W-E-H-M-A-N, and his colleagues in 2014, and it was called Transition from School to Adulthood for Youth with Autism Spectrum Disorder, What Do We Know and What We Need to Know, or in Community Living, despite years of transition planning in middle and high school. So the author cited that despite higher grade point averages than peers with other disabilities, autistic students are more often than not educated in special education sessions and working on coursework that is dramatically different than same-age peers. So students are frequently not taking part in meetings to determine their goals, and the amount of time they spend in community settings is minimal. The authors also reported employment rates for autistic adults really hover somewhere between 4 to 11%, which is testament to many system failures, including transition planning. Here's your second article, 2013 by Eric Cater, C-A-T-E-R. Eric Cater and colleagues specifically explored self-determination among transition age high school students, and they found that despite the value placed on self-determination by families, everybody thought it was a good idea, in many schools, an in-depth focus on self-determination has not penetrated the post-high school curriculum. They pointed out that despite knowledge in the field and guidance from literature, schools are often not drawing on the best of what the field knows works. Schools are not educating learners in the ways that support their self-advocacy and self-determination goals. Well, with transition outcomes as dire as they currently are, we need to step back and look at how ineffective transition services impact communities as a whole. So, third article, according to Valerie Paradise in 2018, she wrote, Essential Self-Advocacy in Transition, that between 2018 and 2028, get ready, over 500,000 autistic students are expected to exit high school into young adult life. That is hundreds and thousands of people who are underprepared to enter young adulthood at alarming rates. Dismal transition planning outcomes contribute to autistic adults who are, this is depressing, unable to access employment, and that means they are unable to earn a wage. Community members who are unable to earn wages are unable to participate fully in their communities because they don't have money to spend at stores. They can't afford to attend community events, and they rely on others' systems to support their lives, like needs for health care, access to food, housing. When autistic people aren't able to participate in their communities, they face further social exclusion and isolation, as if it wasn't hard enough. And this is harmful at the individual level and at the community level. Communities are fractured by large groups of people who are excluded from community participation because the community doesn't value the strengths of the excluded people. Consequently, large groups of people then struggle to see their own value, and then they lose motivation to contribute and fulfill their true potential. Now, let's pause for a minute, because this is a lot of information, some of it quite depressing, and it may be difficult to digest. So we've just scratched the surface enough to establish what isn't working for transition age students and communities. So let's switch gears and talk about what can work. What changes can schools and communities make to positively affect the lives of autistic students as they exit their high school programs? The first step for schools is to expand their definition of self-advocacy, to consider a person's ability to communicate their basic wants and needs sufficiently for community living omits the other ways communication and sharing information with others enriches lives. So, adult self-advocates, quoted in a 2015 study by Ryan and Griffiths called Self-Advocacy and Its Impacts for Adults with Developmental Disabilities, stated that their definition of self-advocacy was much broader. They defined self-advocacy as the ability to give their views, be listened to make their choices and mistakes, and to improve their lives to be more independent. Should this be a more holistic view of self-advocacy taking roots in schools? It will broaden the way educators and school professionals write goals and evaluate students. So dismantling the idea that self-advocacy is only about wants and needs will really create space for schools to ask questions like, can my students give their opinions to others? Can they tell me something they're passionate about? Do they know how to put their goals into words? Following that, the next steps for improving transition outcomes should be related to direct instruction and curricula in schools. And when I say direct instruction, that really means that we are not implying that anybody is going to absorb something by osmosis. They are going to be instructed in how to achieve that goal. So referring back to that article by Wayman, they identified several best practices for preparing autistic students for post-secondary life. So among them, they included priorities such as educating autistic students in inclusive, natural environments as opposed to special education environments. And when you hear that term natural environments come up, that really doesn't mean you're outside in nature. It means you're in a setting that is a real life setting, like the grocery store or a place where you park cars or a store or a flea market. This also means that autistic students are included into classrooms and activities with a diverse group of their peers, which could be people who have all kinds of abilities. I don't mean ethnically diverse. I mean people with all kinds of skill sets. And they're supported by teachers and school staff in ways that help them get their needs met within that diverse environment. That's the real world. Another identified best practice is providing autistic students opportunities for concurrent employment and academic engagement, which is a very fancy way of saying working and going to school at the same time, so students can gain job training services within the context of an actual work environment, not a fake work environment, while they are also still receiving needed academic, life skill, and communication instruction in school. A third takeaway from the research is to prioritize enhancing self-determination and self-advocacy skills through meaningful, let me say that one extra loud, meaningful, hands-on, explicit instruction and opportunities. And this includes helping students learn about themselves, their strengths, their preferences, what they like, what they don't like, what they need, what they're afraid of, and encouraging them to take action based on what they know about themselves. Students deserve opportunities to make choices for themselves and experience what it feels like to take the associated risks, as scary as that may be. Independent decision-making and reasonable risk-taking are the hallmarks of adulthood, and autistic students need practice to learn those skills just like all adolescents. Let's think about that scary time when adolescents are learning how to drive a car. That's a great example. Implementing all of these suggestions is really a heavy lift for transition programs that currently do not adhere to similar practices, but the benefits are proven to make positive changes. All those researchers in the articles that we've talked about today note that transition programs, which contain at least three priorities, contribute to improved self-concept for autistic learners, increased leadership skills, and more favorable employment and community engagement outcomes. To ease the burden on autistic people in transition programs under reform, communities can also make changes to the way they support the coming of age of autistic students. Transition programs really need community partners who will open their venues and workplaces to autistic students who are still learning how to participate in community environments. And this means welcoming students who experience social, behavioral, communication, and sensory challenges into environments that they are often excluded from, and doing so knowing that it will not always go smoothly. Communities can also create spaces that anticipate the needs of autistic people by considering the sensory, communication, and social components of their environments. Venues and places of employment can implement really small changes that can alleviate stress, and they promote inclusivity, and they convey to autistic people that not only are they welcome, but they are valued as community members with unique strengths, gifts, and perspectives. As schools and communities each stretch and grow to adapt to the needs of autistic people in the most effective ways possible, they've got to remember to grow together, too. An approach that dovetails the needs of autistic people with the goals of transition programs and the inclusive initiatives of community partners is the approach that has the most potential to substantially improve outcomes for autistic students and their communities. So I'm going to read again the names of the authors and their articles in case you want to know more. Throw it in Google Scholar and you can learn a lot. The first one starts out with author Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R, in 2013, and the article is Self-Determination Among Transition-Age Youth with Autism or Intellectual Disability, The Parent Perspectives. The second one is spearheaded by author Paradise, which is spelled P-A-R-A-D-I-Z, in 2018, and it's called Essential Self-Advocacy and Transition. The third is by Ryan TG, and it was written in 2015, and it is Self-Advocacy and Its Impact for Adults with Developmental Disabilities. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Dr. Tina Fletcher. Thank you to the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board who made this podcast series possible. And special thanks for many community partners with and without autism who steadily work to tear down barriers and build up supports for autistic community members. We'll see you next time.